This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Teen pregnancy rates in North Carolina are at an historic low. The latest brief from the State Center for Health Statistics indicates that in the past two decades, the teen birth rate has fallen 62%. A body of national research shows the decline is due in large part to increased use of contraceptives. North Carolina data also points to the efficacy of teen pregnancy prevention programs run by nonprofits and the state. Against the backdrop of these trends, the Trump administration is making decisions that limit some teenagers' access to affordable birth control and pregnancy prevention programs. Joining me now is Carolyn Halperin. She's a professor and chair in the Department of Maternal and Child Health at the UNC Gillings School of Public Health. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Also with us is Elizabeth Finley. She's director of strategic communications at Shift NC. It's a statewide nonprofit that works on sexual health initiatives for teens. Elizabeth, welcome. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Carolyn, let's talk about these numbers. North Carolina births are down, teen births, down 60% or more since 1996. What are the factors that contribute to that?
Well, as you mentioned, there have been a number of analyses to try to get a handle on that, which is not easy. You know, it's a complicated issue, but in general, the consensus is that part of it is teens delaying sexual initiation a bit longer. And then the other larger piece really is improvements in contraception.
Well, what do we know about that delay? Because it's one thing to say that pregnancy rates are down, but we still don't know about sexual activity among teens. And so you said that there's some indication that teens are delaying that until later. What are those indicators?
There is. The CDC every other year conducts a survey called the National Youth Risk Behavior Survey, and that's one important way that we document trends over time in adolescent behavior. And so they've documented a steady decline in the percentages of high school students who've ever had vaginal intercourse. Just to give you an example, in 1991, about 54% of high schoolers had vaginal sex, compared to 41% in 2015. So there's been quite a consistent and dramatic decrease in initiation during the high school years.
But Elizabeth, the research shows that the by far the most significant factor in this, and as Carolyn says, it's complicated, there are many factors, but it seems the most significant is access to contraception. How important is it exactly?
That's correct. Research shows that close to 90% of the decrease has been due to increased contraceptive use or use of better contraceptives.
So what has happened since 1996? Why is there better access, or what's happening that would account for such a big decline?
So the decline in the pregnancy rate is largely because of that contraceptive use. So we know that young people are using contraceptives. In the longer term picture, we know that that more people started using condoms as a result of the AIDS epidemic in the early 90s. We see that tie pretty closely to when rates started to drop. But we're also seeing young people use better contraceptives. So methods like IUDs and implants, long-acting reversible contraceptives have been available on the market, and organizations have started to recommend them as an option for teens to choose.
What are some of the biggest barriers, Elizabeth, for teens accessing contraception?
So we've done dozens of focus groups with young people across North Carolina over the last couple of years, and from place to place, the same things tend to surface. So the big thing is a lack of general awareness or misinformation about birth control. So they know only about condoms or the pill. They don't know that they have lots of contraceptive options, or they hear misinformation on the internet or from their friends. So the pill made my friend fat. I don't want to try it because I'm worried about side effects. The second big thing is that they have privacy fears. So they don't understand health systems the way adults do, or protections like HIPAA. In North Carolina, teens can get confidential services, but they don't know that. So they worry, who's going to see me at the clinic? Is this person going to call my mom? And then the third thing is the really practical stuff. So costs, transportation, being able to get an appointment, even knowing which doctor to go to if they don't have a routine medical provider. And so for us, these are our marching orders. We look at the evidence about what works in reducing teen pregnancy, and we know that when teens have easier access to health care, we see fewer teen pregnancies. And so we look at these and say, how do we work with providers and communities to reduce these barriers?
Carolyn Halperin, on Friday, Donald Trump rolled back the contraceptive coverage mandate. That means employers would have to include birth control coverage in their health insurance plans. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have on teenage women in this state in particular?
Well, it's hard to say with, you know, quantitative certainty, but certainly it will have an impact. And it's probably not going to be uniform across different ages of adolescents. So for younger adolescents, they tend to be more reliant on condoms as a form of contraception. Although they're, as Elizabeth said, they do also are increasingly using IUDs and other hormonal methods. But for 18 and 19-year-olds, they are much more likely to use hormonal methods of contraception or IUDs. And so depending on their financial and personal circumstances, it could have an important and negative impact.
The coverage mandate that this week got a lot of news coverage. What has gotten significantly less, Elizabeth, were changes that Donald Trump made to funding, and that happened earlier this year without all the headlines. The administration removed millions of dollars from teen pregnancy prevention programs. I assume they affect programs like yours, right?
They affect us and they affect many of our partners.
Tell us what was lost here.
So these are programs that are evidence-based, started by the Obama administration, and we're bringing millions of dollars into North Carolina to help especially the most vulnerable youth. And in early July, we got notification that rather than ending in 2020, these programs would end in 2015. For our organization, we're losing two programs. One called NC Youth Connected works in Cumberland and Wayne counties and takes a multi-sector approach to get community leaders, healthcare providers, schools, community groups on the same page about teen pregnancy prevention. And the other one called Every Teen Counts works with the foster care and juvenile detention centers, or foster care system and juvenile detention centers, to take trauma-informed approaches to teen pregnancy prevention, which is really cutting-edge work.
So that means that you would take a different approach if you know that there's trauma in the background. The kind of counseling that you would deliver would be different in that case than it would be for, sorry, just in a sort of teenage high school setting or something like that.
That's absolutely correct. It's taking programs we know that work and adapting them to be cognizant of the fact that young people may have experienced past abuse, sexual assault. They may already be parents themselves.
When we talk about the decrease in so-called risky behaviors and then in teenagers engaging in sexual intercourse, for instance, now at a later age. Talk about some of the other programs and parts of your counseling beyond contraception in a program like yours, where you talk about relationships and the way that teens can talk about sex that might give them a different idea about when to engage and how.
Sure. So there are a number of evidence-based programs that we work with communities to implement. We work with those communities to help them choose a program that's going to work best for the young people they're working with and in that community. And they vary widely. So they tend to cover abstinence. All of them include abstinence. They include contraceptive methods. They talk about healthy relationships. And a lot of them are very light on the actual sex stuff and talk more about how to make decisions, how to make positive decisions about your health and your future.
And tell us a bit about sex education in North Carolina, whether it's uniform or sort of how it gets made.
Sure. So in 2009, the legislature passed the Healthy Youth Act, and it created some baseline standards for sex education in North Carolina. In grades 7, 8, and 9, or across those years, young people are supposed to learn about abstinence, contraceptive methods, STI prevention, and also some things about healthy relationships, so dating abuse, sex trafficking, things like that. The challenge we see is that there, since there's no state curriculum in every every local school system has to make its own decisions about how to implement. We don't just see it vary from county to county. We see it vary from school to school and classroom to classroom. And in the big picture, it was essentially an unfunded mandate. It's a subject that they don't test on. And so with all of the things that schools have to do, it ends up pretty low on the priority list, tends to be a topic that not everybody is equipped to teach or comfortable teaching.
So then do they engage nonprofits like you? Has that been part of the strategy?
Sure. So right after the Healthy Youth Act passed, we worked with a number of school systems to help help them select curricula and also focus on professional development. So piloting a training for teachers called Awkward to Awesome, where they really work. Teachers have an opportunity to learn just how to talk about sensitive topics in front of a room of seventh graders, how to answer sensitive questions, covering the basics of reproductive anatomy.
But now your funding has been cut.
So our funding has been cut. As an organization, that's really difficult. We're looking at a number of solutions. And one thing that is that's nice in North Carolina is there are a number of funders who have been at the table through the years to think about evidence-based strategies to address teen pregnancy prevention. So Duke Endowment, Z. Smith Reynolds, Cone Health Foundation, Foundation for a Healthy High Point. I mean, with the Trump administration's cuts, we're talking about essentially a $15 million loss to the state of North Carolina, a $2 million loss a year to our organization, and that's hard to recover from. So we're looking at a number of strategies because what we don't want to do is backtrack on the progress.
Elizabeth Finley is Director of Strategic Communications at Shift NC. Carolyn Halperin is a professor and chair of the Department of Maternal and Child Health at the UNC Gilling School of Public Health. Carolyn and Elizabeth, thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find a link to the teen pregnancy data we talked about at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a deep dive into charter schools on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.